Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. I am joined today by Roy Snell and Karen Lachana-Kenny. Roy is best known, of course, as the former CEO of SCCE and HCCA, currently serving as a strategic advisor. Roy and Karen work together, with Karen serving as editor on Roy's new book, Integrity Works, which the association has just published. Roy, Karen, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Glad to be here.
Thanks, Adam.
So, Roy, what inspired you to write the book in the first place?
Well, I think the current state of integrity, Adam, in our culture is slipping a little bit. There's a lot of groupthink, confirmation bias, and the lack of critical thinking is hurting our integrity. I think there's a void in books that are available on the topic of integrity. Those who try to write on this subject fall into two categories, you know, a philosophical, academic, theoretical approach in which fables involving the king, children, and planting seeds were involved. That approach often gets standing ovations, but they provide little practical help for those who want to improve. The other approach I see a lot of people take is to spend like two pages of the book telling you what integrity is, and then the rest of the book they tell you what morals to have, which are coincidentally the same morals as the author. They tell you how to manage people, raise a family, what social issues to support, and which politicians to vote for. And frankly, after about a year of researching, I couldn't find a definition of integrity remotely close to any of that.
So that brings up what the definition of integrity is. And I think it's the collection of the actions we take and the words we say over time, and whether or not those words and actions align with our core beliefs. And if they do, we can be considered to be a person of integrity. We're solid from our inner beliefs to our outer actions and words. What we did with Roy's book is provide some practical ways for people to work on having integrity in different areas of their lives, whether professional or personal. It's practicality that is what makes this book different from the rest of the books.
Yeah, which certainly raises a good point, is that integrity really depends on what you do, not in theory, but in practice. Now, you've mentioned about how you developed the book. Can you talk a bit about the structure and how you intend for it to be used by compliance and ethics professionals?
We have four main chapters. One on being genuine, another one on bias, the truth and civil debate is a third chapter, and then there's a chapter on critical thinking. And my hope is that this book will give compliance professionals a strong understanding of integrity, which would help them when devising an effective compliance and ethics program. It's a big part of a compliance and ethics program is prevention. And I think they can use this book to help teach people things that might prevent them from making a mistake.
And we structured the book to have a variety of different ways to present the idea of integrity and how to act with integrity. We included different quotes from thought leaders. We have definitions of words related to integrity. We have different charts about different kinds of liars. And more. And we also have workshop exercises so that people can put some of the ideas into practice and see what works for them and what doesn't. And we also, in each chapter, included interviews with ethical leaders, Joel Rogers, Jerry Zak, Dan Roach, and Margaret Hambleton. And they each provide their unique perspectives on the topics in the chapters. And some of the ways to use this book are to start ethics discussions in mentor-mentee relationships and in employee ethics education.
Which I think is great because it really does make the book usable and practical. And then for people in compliance and ethics, being able to hear from their peers counts for a lot. Now, when it comes to integrity, it's something that's simple on paper. You should, as you write in the book, and I'm quoting, craft your actions to align with your beliefs, find a culture that truly fits you, and surround yourself with supportive people to cultivate your authenticity. Now, in practice, though, that tends to be hard for people. It's not just that others around you may not be so virtuous, but we also have a hard time saying no to an ice cream sundae, let alone, the big issues that we face each day. How can we better enable ourselves to stick to our beliefs, even when we may not want to?
There's a handful of questions, and I get that I have a similar response to everybody's looking for some sort of miracle fix, and if they aren't given that miracle thing you can do to accomplish something like having integrity, they throw up their hands and walk away. It's hard work, it takes commitment, it takes constant study. Adam, you're a baseball fan, and everything you say about integrity is true for baseball. On paper, it looks simple. People throw a ball, catch a ball, hit a ball. Occasionally, they run somewhere. If someone walked up to any professional baseball player and said, in practice, playing baseball, professional baseball for sure, is very hard. How can I be good enough to play pro ball? The obvious answer is constant hard work for years. If you want integrity, the answer is the same. Get off your derriere and work hard. I just find it remarkable that people talk about this endlessly and don't study it. I just studied it for a year, and I don't think it's enough. It has to be a weekly sort of thing.
I agree. It's hard work and it takes commitment to follow through and have integrity in every aspect of your life. It also takes courage because it's not always the popular thing to do. You may be going up against some powerful people or the group's consensus when you choose to stick to your beliefs and have integrity. But if you've made the commitment in the long run, it's easier to have integrity. You don't have to remember stories or lies that make up the outer self you've constructed. And as Joel Rogers said in chapter one, I think he said it perfectly, people don't recognize the incredible freedom that can come from simply being who you are in the world, instead of trying to create a narrative of a fake self that others will approve of.
Intriguing. And it is one of the more difficult things, especially because also in addition to the group dynamics that may want you to go another way, there is that part of us that is always screaming, no, 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 be quiet, be a part of the group, go along and don't stick your head out. Now, one of the greatest acts of courage and integrity is becoming a whistleblower, whether you report internally or externally. I just recorded a podcast with Tyler Schultz, who was the Theranos whistleblower, and he's listening to him, you can hear how difficult it was on one level, but also to your point, Karen, was easy on another because his own sense of integrity required him to do something. The problem with whistleblowers and it's intended, instead of being celebrated, they're often vilified. I think what happens is we tend to put integrity second to protecting the group. That we all like a whistleblower unless we work with them, and then that person suddenly becomes a traitor. What's your sense? Is that a form of bias that we have built into ourselves?
My answer is not going to be terribly popular, but before I get to that unpopular answer, I'm going to acknowledge that it is exactly what integrity is when you blow the whistle on an actual problem, you are sticking to your core values and morals. You're acting on, as Karen described earlier, the definition of integrity is acting on your morals. You don't just talk or whatever. And the other part I want to say is that people do put integrity second to protecting their group. But here's something that isn't talked about much at all. There's a company called Navex who does an annual survey, of or analysis of data that they have in their system. They're one of the largest, if not the largest, hotline call centers in the world, and they have a lot of data. And not only do they have the whistleblower calls, they also have data on how they were followed up on, how long it took, which ones were substantiated and which weren't. And the most recent data I could find is 2018, 44% of the calls were substantiated. 44% of the allegations of wrongdoing were substantiated. And what is not talked about is that 56% of the calls were wrong. Either somebody misunderstood the rule of law, or they were wrong about what somebody did. And what may cause whistleblowers a little trouble is because 50% or more of the people who turn in something to be investigated are wrong. And I have personally witnessed many damning allegations. I've managed people for about 35 years and responded to allegations, and people have no idea how horrifying it is to be falsely accused and dragged through the mud and their reputation sullied. Now, some of the hotline calls that are wrong don't harm anyone, but when they do, the hotline calls that are inaccurate, but when they do, they can leave a real problem for the person who was falsely accused. So, you know, it's part of the chapter in the book about critical thinking. Critical thinking is gather all the facts, talk to experts, look at all the data, not just a biased set of the data. And most of the conversations about whistleblowers is how poorly they're treated, and some are. But what people don't talk about enough is that a great deal of people are falsely accused and their lives are hurt. And I just think we need to look at all the information, not just the information that suits our narrative.
Well, Roy, Karen, thank you so much for talking to us today. And thank you for Integrity Works, which is available on the SCCE and HCCA websites. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.